Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And I think we're taking you back once again to Paso Robles.
We are.
Talking about eating, staying there, interesting foods, interesting little organic shops, a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of a little grab bag of Paso Robles. First up, a really fascinating food product being produced in an unusual way, in an unusual spot on the coast of Central California. And I think the interview is probably pretty self-explanatory.
I had a real education and an exciting time of it all, and some delicious tasting as well. We're going to talk to Brad Buckley, who's the sales manager for the Abalone Farm, an operation that I've known about for quite some time and was really anxious to be able to tour. Welcome, Brad, to On the Menu.
Well, thank you so much for
And you give such
me.
A great tour. I mean, with wit, humor, it was just wonderful. I was telling you that when you started I never think of them as live, but they, like, and I didn't hold one, which I'm sorry about, but the idea that they're trying to escape, I think of them as like pebbles or rocks, but they're not, right?
They're not. No, they actually move around pretty quickly.
Where do they go? I mean,
especially when you take them out of the water, they start complaining
and really
will start moving around in your hand sometime.
Well, how often do you take them out? Just for tours?
Oh, just for tours. You know, but any other reason, they're very content in their tanks in the water. The only reason they would crawl out of the tank is if there would be a problem in the tank. Say, if by chance a large rock crab had gotten in, maybe with
the
kelp supply.
Them.
Oh yeah, they'll sense a predator. In fact, at one time we had a saltwater aquarium in our office, and the guys would bring up things that they would collect, out of the tanks or stuff that would come in the kelp sometime. I mean,
you feed them kelp.
Right. The seaweed that we harvest right offshore. It'd be kind of the odd occurrence that something would come in with the kelp, but sometimes we would get some crabs that would come in, or you'd get the occasional little fish that might get caught in the kelp and
they
come
eat
in.
Them too, huh?
Oh no, they won't eat. They're vegetarian. They just eat the kelp.
Oh, okay.
But in
now,
that saltwater,
what is an abalone?
Well, an abalone is actually, people refer to them as a shellfish, but they're actually a gastropod, a marine snail. Oddly enough, they're related to octopus and squid. They're a very ancient creature. They're found back in the fossil record from the time of the dinosaurs. And they've remained relatively unchanged over all of that time. So they're really unique. They're unusual.
Now, why do you have to farm them? I remember when people used to just dive for them.
Yeah, they were very common. They're very prolific spawners. When they spawn like fish, they're broadcast spawners, meaning they release the eggs in the millions. So you get a lot of abalone out in a certain area, and being that they're broadcast spawners and they're in close proximity, you get millions of abalone from that. But what happened over the years is that unsustainable fishing practices, the environment changed, they're very sensitive to pollution, and also they're some of the favorite foods of some of the predators right off the coast. So all of those things came into play, and the wild population started to drop dramatically. Now, understand, I mean, the abalone fishery or diving, commercial diving, didn't start up in California until like the 1930s. Before then, it was a really untapped seafood resource until the 1930s.
Well, I guess then with the scarcity, it became a delicacy.
It became a delicacy then, and abalone have a very, very slow growth rate. So,
I was shocked when you told us, how long does it take to grow to the market size from the spawn?
The youngest abalone that we will sell at market size at 3 and a quarter or 3.5 inches is a 4-year-old abalone.
And what about six-year-olds there?
And we'll hold them up to 6 years old. We'll hold the fast growers. So we'll call the inventory for the fastest grower. We'll find those. And we'll just call out the slow growers and sell those off at a smaller size and then keep the fast growers. And at 6 years, we can get them up a little over five. The largest abalone we've grown that I've measured is five and a half inches in 6 years. And the reason we don't hold them any longer than that, because just their physiology, the way they grow, their fastest growth rates will occur up to anywhere between 4 and 6 years old. So after 6 years old, even the fast growers, their growth rates slow down.
But they used to be much bigger.
Oh, yes. And the ones out in the wild.
The
California
about.
Red abalone is the species that we grow, grows natively right offshore from us. That is the largest growing species in the world and can grow up to 12 inches in shell length. However, an abalone that size, no one knows how old that is because it's never been studied.
Not necessarily, but
depending on how you process it or handle it when you would catch it. But the thing is that an abalone that large, there's no correlation in the shell size to the age anymore. Once they get over 6 years old.
You said that. I don't know how you tell how old it is then.
You really don't. And it's being studied. I mean, there are estimates that they can live, 40 years or more, but they don't really know because it's never been studied. They're trying to extrapolate the age abalone that are out in the wild, taking samples of their shells, and then comparing that to specimen shells that they have in museums of some of the largest abalone that they have.
But the shells, of course, are a beautiful byproduct, huh?
They are. A lot of the mother-of-pearl jewelry and inlay that you see, just about all of that is coming from some species of abalone.
Now, you've created an environment that reproduces the environment in which abalone spawn, breed, and then grow from the tiny little specks you can't even see, except you can see them a little bit because they're green.
Right.
And you've created that right by the side of the ocean.
That's right. We're very proud of that practice. A lot of farmed aquaculture products, they're grown in a lot more controlled, a little bit more restricted type of environment. I mean, just for the purposes of being able to grow the crop as efficiently as possible. With abalone, however, it's a very ancient species. They're going to do what they're going to do, and there's really little you can do that you can change to make it them do, faster or get fatter. Yeah, they're just going to do what they're going to do.
You've got basically two ingredients. You've got a sea, a fresh seawater environment.
Right.
And kelp and that other seaweed that you grow.
Right. The dulse is the other seaweed that we grow.
I'm sorry, I didn't taste that.
It's good. It's good. It's very healthy.
I like seaweed.
Mm-hmm.
This is about as simple as it gets.
Well, and the other thing too, our method for growing abalone is different from a lot of other abalone farms that are not only in California, but in other parts of the world growing other species of abalone. They grow them in indoor tanks or covered tanks, and the purpose of that is to keep the outside of the shell clean and free of algae. So, of course, the shell is very beautiful, and you'd like to be able to, a seafood distributor handling live seafood would like to be able to show that off in their tanks. Well, our tanks are outdoors, and it's just like exposed to the sunlight. You get a lot of sea growth. You get a lot of algae. So our abalone are grown with their algae growing on the back of their shells, just like what you would find out in the wild.
It's cute. You say they sometimes climb on each other, clean off
the algae. They all climb on each other's backs and start grazing on the algae that's growing on the others.
You're not going to tell me they have personalities now, are you?
Oh, no, they don't. They're pretty, I guess you could say, dull.
Yeah, they're slightly more exciting than a rock.
Right.
But only just.
But the benefit of having them in that natural tide pool environment is the variety of food that they get to eat on top of the food that we collect for them and grow for them. So they'll get a more natural wild diet. And abalone being a mild tasting seafood, whatever they eat will affect the flavor.
What else do they eat? You just showed us the kelp and the dulse.
The kelp we harvest right offshore. The dulse is a type of native seaweed that we grow in some of our tanks. And then they're feeding on algae that are just growing in the tank. So if you ever, at the tide pools, you'll see different types of algae and other types of seaweeds that are growing. In our tanks, there's a type of algae that is called coralline. And oddly enough, even though it's a plant, the leaves have a hard calcium shell. And it's red. And it's one of the favorite foods of abalone. They actually graze on that as a calcium source to grow more shell.
It's not coral.
It's not coral, but
coraline.
It would look like coral if you didn't realize it was a plant.
Now, this comes in with the seawater that you pump into the tanks, right?
It sure does. So there are all these varieties of algae that are growing in the tanks along with the abalone, and they're feeding on these things. And it's different from some of the other farm practices that that's what distinguishes us.
Now, do you, of course, we were privileged to have this tour, that, and you do a wonderful tour. And we even have a tour cat.
we had the tour cats. Yeah. We had Sheba and
Blackjack. But now, how many tours do you do, and who gets a tour, and how do they arrange it?
Well, the tours we give on a very limited basis. We're not open to the public. We're not actually agritourism. We do offer school group tours, and we offer the school groups as many tours as we can, given the time element that we have. And then we offer to special groups, say chefs, chef groups. I like to stay in contact with a lot of the culinary schools. And in fact, the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, they bring out graduating chefs 2 to 3 times a year, and I give them a tour.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that, on top of private tours, we will arrange private tours occasionally. And it's just all a factor of timing, and because it's either myself or one of the other managers.
Now, you just put out a DVD. Is that more about the cooking, or do you have any literature on the actual growing, raising, and farming?
Well, on the DVD, which is available on our website, abalonefarm.com, the DVD does have a tour of the farm on it.
Oh, that'd be good.
A very, very similar to what I gave you, showing how we grow the abalone and showing all the different sections of the farm and the different stages of growth.
Oh, that's good.
And then also I have on there, if you ordered abalone either live from a seafood distributor or if you ordered abalone steak through our website,
which is
frozen, show you,
huh?
That's right. I show you how it would be received and all the different methods for handling it and preparing it. I also show how to clean an abalone from the shell, which I don't, you know, abalone isn't, it's still an exotic. It's not a mainstream seafood item. If you think about it, most people know a typical preparation if they got clams or mussels or oysters or things like that. But I know a lot of people, they look at an abalone and they're, what in the world am I going
to
do with that?
To it,
exactly.
Really. I mean, I used to get it in restaurants when I had it before it got so scarce and expensive. And I mean, it's still pretty expensive. You say not.
Right,
People can order it right off your website.
Right.
And you say it's how much a pound?
It's $75 a pound. That's the tenderized abalone steak. $75 a pound plus the shipping. So by the time you ship it, you know, you're probably in the $120 a pound range.
And now,
yes,
that
sounds very expensive.
Do you ship it live?
We ship it to our distributors who have live holding tanks. The steak is already packaged and tenderized. That's what we sell direct to the public.
That's dead and preserved.
That's already cleaned from the shell and tenderized and vacuum packed, so it's ready to cook. And then
you cooked it. You showed us, first of all, my favorite is just raw sashimi.
Right, straight out of the shell.
And it was tender. I mean, you know, I don't know why. But
a lot of people, and I heard this yesterday from a gentleman in the group, that the last time he had abalone sushi, it was chewy. And I reminded him, well, abalone is very fickle. The meat is very fickle. If it isn't handled properly from the get-go, from the time of harvest, it's not going to come out the way you're going to expect it to come out. In fact, knowing how it was handled prior to the time that you received it will affect your decision on how you should prepare it. So I actually explain a lot of that in the DVD. Abalone is frozen whole in the shell before it's tenderized. It's not going to be the same texture as if you had tenderized it first and then you froze it. Yeah. So it affects the, you know, if you're going to cook it, if you're going to prepare it raw, sashimi, ceviche style, you're going to want a fresh abalone that is fresh out of a tank, either out, you know, straight from a farm somewhere or straight from a live seafood distributor.
Some of these Chinese restaurants that keep fish tanks, you'll probably be able to get some, huh?
Yes, that and those are few and far between. I'm more restaurants that serve sushi, I see, are having live seafood tanks, live holding tanks. Yeah. But they're expensive and difficult to maintain, of course. So there are not too many out there.
We forgot to mention, or we just haven't yet mentioned, I think is important, is that you have a very safe operation. Everything's all natural. There's no, you don't use chemicals at all.
We are an open system. The seawater is pumped up and through our tanks and right back out into the ocean. And we are, on Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch as a safe, seafood.
Oh, that's great. That's something that people can use.
And Seafood Choices Alliance.
That's great.
We're recognized as a very safe, environmentally safe operation.
Well, it was wonderful.
Yeah, abalone lovers should celebrate the fact that you're in operation.
Well,
and
thank you.
And those of you who haven't become abalone lovers yet, you will.
Yes. And Brad, you just gave a fascinating introduction to me to the whole world of abalone.
Well, I'm really glad you came out to the farm, both of
it.
You, and enjoyed the tour so much. I'm so happy to show people that are interested and share the love of trying new things and learning about abalone especially.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Well, he certainly has a very interesting job, and that's a wonderful place. I love abalone. And now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back to On the Menu. You know how to stay in touch with us through the usual Twitter and Facebook and email. And Peter has a new blog.
Yeah, a new blog called onthemenuradio.wordpress.com.
There you'll find things posted that in more detail than we have then we can cover at any given time in an interview.
That's, of course, if the blogmeister gets himself organized.
But first up is a good one, Valencia.
Yes, yeah, so you'll have fun with that one. And it's a work in process, but we hope you'll enjoy it and you'll participate with us through the blog because it's another way for us to bring you new information in addition to the program.
So now we're going to some place where we had a wonderful lunch, wonderful wine tasting, and olive oil tasting, sitting in full sunlight in an open courtyard, and boy, it was swell.
And the olive oil was from a company called Pasolivo. The website is www.pasolivo.com.
A very special, special oil.
And we met Alex and Monica Villacana, who have a little story of their own. We unfortunately didn't get a chance to record of how they decided to move from the big city of Los Angeles to the small small vineyard which they have in Paso Robles. I think they only make about 2,000 cases of wine, but they live happily and really are having a wonderful time enjoying themselves with their children, doing something that they always wanted to do. So they are Villacana Vineyards, and it's Villicana, and the website is villacanawinery.com. Anyway, he is the owner of Thomas Hill Organics.
Debbie Thomas, how did you get into this business? How did you even get to Paso Robles? I never know if it's Robles or Robles after talking to everybody. Your business is called Thomas Hill Organic, and we had lunch there, and it was wonderful. How did you end up in Paso Robles?
Well, my husband and I moved up from Pasadena about 6 years ago. And he used to be a wine buyer for Trader Joe's. And Paso Robles was one of the areas he would come up to when it was really small, not that many wineries, come and buy wine for Trader Joe's. So
like,
he actually...
What is it? Buck Chuck?
Two Buck Chuck. Two Buck Chuck. But he came, probably 18 years ago when it was, you know, when there was probably 12 wineries at that time. And so he's really the one that introduced me to Paso Robles. And I moved out from New York about 10 years ago, and that's when we met. And then we bought our property 6 years ago, and we moved up. And we just love it up in Paso Robles.
Uh-huh. And now it's subtitled, your business, Market Bistro and Wine Bar.
And let me give you a little background.
Yeah.
When we moved up here, I was in sales for a company called Adidas, which is the sneaker company. And my husband said, I'll move to Paso if I can be a farmer. So we obviously bought 10 acres, and he started a farm. And originally, he was just going to do specialty greens, kales and the spinaches, et cetera. Then he ended up getting a hold of a backhoe. And being a guy with a big toy, he ended up digging about 850 holes in the property.
Jeez.
So now we have over 850 fruit and nut trees, everything that you can grow here, from pears and plums and pluots and peaches and figs, etc. So about 3 years ago, we started a CSA program, which is a community-supported agriculture.
Yeah.
And we started doing baskets for all of our neighbors, filled with what we were growing on the farm. And it kept growing and growing until we got out of baskets because we couldn't afford to buy those anymore, and we started doing boxes. And a little over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, I was still working for Adidas, and one of my biggest accounts closed, unfortunately, and we had to make a decision because they wanted me to move to Seattle. So we decided, what else can we do to highlight what we do here on the farm? And we ended up, one of our neighbors pointed out this beautiful spot where you saw the patio where you
lunched.
Oh, it's
gorgeous, really gorgeous.
It was a blank canvas at that time. And I looked at it and I said, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. And I said, how hard could the restaurant business be?
Oh, please.
Boy, has it been a learning experience.
Yeah. Aren't you a silly girl?
Oh, aren't I though?
As if selling athletic shoes and creating a farm wasn't enough, you decided you had to do something else.
Yes, yes, exactly. So, yeah, organic farm and a restaurant. We're definitely...
It was a delicious lunch, and everything is as close to organic as you can get it.
Absolutely. We can't grow everything here in Paso Robles, but we also use all of our neighbors to, like the avocados we get from along the coast. Things that we can't grow, we try to get elsewhere.
And steak. You're big on steak.
Yes, huh? Yes. And we get most of our meats from a place in Templeton. Her name is Debbie Paver, actually. So it's hormone-free and antibiotic-free.
Well, we have some wonderful stuff. You provided appetizers for the table that were just stunning. Absolutely. I'm trying to remember what some of those were.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we grow beautiful arugula. And one of them was the arugula with all of the fresh fruit in it, the blood oranges, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, it's in season.
Oh, and it's in season, blood absolutely. Orange,
yeah.
The one that made the biggest impression on me was the pea salad.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, because absolutely.
Nothing personifies spring like peas.
No.
And you had pea tendrils and peas and peas.
And
shoots.
Peas. And we made our own saffron ricotta.
Oh,
so
that
to
was
put on
fabulous,
it, wasn't that great?
Too.
Yeah, that was
that
great.
That saffron ricotta was wonderful.
Yes. Everything we do from scratch. And everything we have, I know you've got to see our kitchen. It's very small compared to most restaurants. So we bring in everything fresh every day. All of our meats, our fish, you know, our vegetables. My husband picks in the morning. I bring it over. So it's really, really delightful.
You know, we also, Peter had that, your sandwiches were unique. He had that pork belly.
Ah, the barbecued pork belly.
Oh, yeah. He was in Seventh Heaven, weren't you, Rabbit?
Yes.
Well, there's a reason behind that, which I was going to ask about next, because sometimes good things happen as well as bad things, like losing your largest account.
Yes.
And one of those happened to you, and that was the person you found to take over your kitchen.
Yes.
Oh, she's fabulous.
She's fabulous. She's actually very young. She'll turn 23 tomorrow. Her name is Julie Simon.
Wish her happy birthday.
We will, believe me.
I was hoping we'd meet her. She didn't
She was hiding in the back. But... Yeah, she, fortunately for us, there was a high-end restaurant in San Luis Obispo, which is one of our neighbors, that closed. In this economy, it's tough when you, when you're a high-end restaurant. And we just happened to happen at the right time. And so we snagged her, and she went and first looked at our farm, and she was in heaven because she's French. And, you know, the French people, they're used to going to the market every day and getting their fresh produce and bringing it in. And she goes, she buys the stuff, and she brings it back, and she just creates things. She's just amazing.
Yes. Well,
so she has a pick of your farm first?
Absolutely.
And then she has a network of suppliers as well?
Absolutely.
Now, at the same time, now, you said you were with Adidas. I thought this was kind of cute. We also had a winemaker there, and his wife was with Reebok, was it?
Yes, Reebok.
Which, I thought that was interesting.
That was fun. It was the first person I've really met that was in our area, but that was definitely interesting.
Well, we did two things while we ate. We tasted wine, and we tasted olive oil. Could you tell us a little bit about both the wine maker and the olive oil maker?
Yes, as far as the olive oil, Pasolivo, and we actually incorporated all of their olive oil into our appetizers that you tasted.
Right, exactly.
Which was great, yes. And they've been very high-end.
Yeah, she's in that book, New
yes,
American
yes,
Olive Oil.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then our winemakers, they've been here for, I want to say, about 10 or 11 years as well. And they had a beautiful rosé. I know you tasted that, as well as a wonderful Viognier and a Syrah.
And the names?
Monica. Villacana, I think.
Yes, Villacana.
Villacana. Yes. And is that an outlet for the olive oil right there or not?
No, it's not.
No, okay. Anyhow, it was wonderful. What's next?
Well, we just expanded. Back in October, we took over another space next to us
right.
because we do have the beautiful patio, but we were challenged come winter, so we took over the indoor
right.
dining. So now we have outdoor as well as indoor dining.
So on the corner of the alley next to the patio?
Well, right next to the patio. Actually, in the courtyard, there was okay. a little spot that we took over next door. So that's great. And gosh, I don't know what's next. I think our hands are so full right now between the organic farm and the restaurant and doing that CSA program. But we'd love to expand at some point.
Now you're open every day?
We're open every day but Tuesday.
Okay. So,
and what about website?
Oh, you can find us on www.thomashillorganics.com.
Yeah, and that's the THOM.
Yes.
Yes. And
now you cut me off quickly. You're open 6 days a week, not Tuesday, for lunch and dinner?
We're open 6 days a week for lunch and dinner. Sunday we do a lovely brunch from 10 to 3.
Oh, that's...
Yes, and then Tuesday we are closed. And we seat Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday till 8 o'clock, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday we seat up until 9.
Well, you were busy for lunch. Is it as busy at dinner?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So reservations... Accepted and recommended?
Reservations are definitely recommended, especially on a Friday or Saturday.
Because this place is very central. Is there a more central place you could be?
Well, if I was...
I guess you could be in the
middle
of the park.
I guess I could be at the park. If I was in the middle of the park, that would definitely work. But, yeah, we're a long block off the park. So, but we're hidden because our entrance is really in an alley.
Right.
So that's always important. People keep saying, we almost gave up. We couldn't find you.
But there is a sign in the shop.
Yes, there is.
So, mm-hmm. so you can walk in through the shop. I saw
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you can access our patio through three shops right now.
Three shops.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a wonderful logo. Tell us about
it. It's a pair.
Tell us about
I wanted one of those T-shirts. I forgot about that.
Oh, I wish I would have known. I would have brought you one. But you can always stop by to get one. Because my background is actually sales and marketing. And I'm a big believer in brand identification. So we wanted something that really stood out and that people would recognize. And therefore, when we created our logo, we picked a pair. It talks about, you know, organic to everybody. At least it talks about produce. And so that was kind of how we came up with that.
Well, it's very smart. And your servers the staff was amazingly knowledgeable. I was very impressed with the servers and staffing. So you like this as well, selling shoes?
It has its good days and its bad. I'll be honest with you, Ann. But, no, I love it. I love the interaction with everybody. You know what? I just love the fact that everybody who comes in loves what we're doing. And
okay.
everybody leaves, and they're just amazed with how great the food is. So, and the service. I pride myself in good service. You know, coming from, again, from sales and marketing, the two key for me are, well, if you have good food and you have good service, be successful.
And people will come back.
And people will come back.
And certainly, listeners, we highly recommend this place. And if you have trouble finding it, call ahead make your reservation and get directions. Thanks a lot, Debbie.
Oh, thank you, Ann.
What
thank
a
you,
pleasure
Peter.
For us.
Great.
And now it's time to take another break, a short commercial break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. And now we have, I think it would be news to you that Hearst is also a source for fine wines.
Well, people may not even know the Hearst family all that well, but it was a family that, first of all, were landowners and ranchers. And then the William Randolph Hearst, who was a great newspaper man, as you probably know, decided to build what he called a little ranch, which is just a little bit more than that. And there'd always been a large herd of beef on there, but they recently decided to change their beef to market it as Hearst grass-fed beef, and then more recently decided that they ought to be in the wine business as well. So they did a joint venture with a vineyard that already existed, and it's now branded as Hearst Wines. So we talked about both these subjects with Jim Saunders, with Clint the cowboy, Cliff the cowboy.
My very first in the flesh cowboy, and he could have come from Central Casting.
And the winemaker from there too. So here's the Hearst story.
We next have a delegation, I guess we'd call it, since we were three, from the Hearst Ranch Enterprises, encompassing beef, wine, and we're going to talk to three people who are essential to this operation. We have Cliff Garrison, who's the only cowboy I've ever really met. We have Jim Saunders, is it, or Sanders?
Saunders, yes.
Yeah, who is the wine person. And then also the vineyard manager is Jeremy Leffert. Welcome to On the Menu. Now, Peter has asked to sing a little song.
Yeah, there was a risk. there was a risk that I was going to sing Mamas Don't Let Your Son Grow Up to Be Cowboys, but Cliff broke that rule. But being a cowboy is something more than just a job, isn't it? It's a profession, and it's handed down from generation to generation. Is that how you got involved in being a cowboy?
Yeah, that's right, Peter. Being a cowboy is something that is a heritage that's passed down through the years. My granddad, my dad, my whole family, and all my friends are cowboys. So it's something we're very proud of, something that we're losing a little bit traditionally, but we're striving to keep cowboys alive and well.
What does a cowboy do?
Well, a cowboy does a lot of things. In today's world, a cowboy is a jack of all trades, in that there's a lot of ranch management that goes along with just caring for the herd, caring for the herd's health. And basically, that's what we are in the beef business. So we have a large number of cattle on a large property. So it's our responsibility to make sure they're cared for nutritionally, health, and such. So we try to do it in a manner that is very simple and basic, going back to the old ways that we raise cattle, and that's the grass-fed beef program. And
now large is a bit of an understatement, because this is a ranch that is...
Yeah, let me explain. We're in Central California on the Pacific Ocean. We have 18 miles of Pacific Ocean coastline within our ranch, Hearst Castle in the middle of it, and the property is 129 square miles, which encompasses 80,000 acres. And inland we have another ranch called the Jack Ranch that is 73,000 acres.
And this has been under the same ownership since 1860. Really a remarkable piece of American and California history.
Very remarkable. We're same family ownership for over 140 years. And we have, and that whole time, always been in the cattle business. So cattle are very central to our operation.
But you changed the focus more recently to not just enjoying raising cattle, but doing something very special with the Hearst grass-fed beef program. So tell us a little bit about that, Cliff.
Now, that's correct. About 6 years ago, we looked at branding our product to, you know, market the beauty of the ranch and the surrounding that we're in. It was another way to look at adding value to our cattle. Basically, for us, you know, get into niche marketing and branding, which, you know, Hearst has a big name. Our castle on the property that's owned by the state of California now is very well known worldwide. So we get 700,000 visitors a year that come through the ranch. So it's a good showcase for cattle operations and land stewardship, private property ownership. It's, you know, been in the family for 140 years managing livestock.
Well, when we visited, those cows, they were funny, weren't they? They sort of gathered around and stared at us is what they did. Some of them, of course, lots and lots of them. They seemed very contented. And you're pretty extreme in managing this particular niche market. You said that if somebody got sick or a cow got sick and you had to give it antibiotics, you would never put it into this particular niche market.
That's right.
How strict are you?
Well, we're very strict, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because what you've seen with the cattle is part of our low-stress method of handling cattle. So we want cattle to be comfortable around man, especially man on foot, because we are traditionally horseback all the time. And so we spend a lot of time to desensitize our cattle or get them to where they are very comfortable and they are not stressed, be it man's, you know, they're basically used to predators. It's a large property, so they're on the defensive most of the time. So we spend a lot of time in the low stress handling, every chance we get to handle our cattle, to desensitize them so that they're nice to be around. They're comfortable with, you know, human beings. So we do desensitize them in that regard. As your question was regarding the antibiotics and the hormones.
Yeah.
We are very strict in that we are never, ever hormone or antibiotic is given to any of our cattle. Now, saying that, they don't go into our branded beef program. If we have to administer antibiotics, which is very rare because of the way we raise cattle in that large open space, it's our responsibility to treat cattle if they get sick, but they will not go into our beef program.
Now, this is a very special program, branded, and you can buy across the country, and you can buy online, first of all, but then you're in distribution a good deal across the country.
That's right. Yeah, we can ship beef to your door UPS. If it's a frozen product, we do ship anywhere in the United States.
And we sampled some yesterday, so we know that it's really good stuff.
Thank you. We love it. We think it's a taste of our area on the Central Coast, which applies to your wine, you know, in this region as well. We think there's a big similarity in the ground, the minerals, what's in the ground comes through that as a natural forage for our cattle that is a taste of our beef, which is a taste of our ranch and our surroundings.
And it's beautiful grass, and you never let them mow it all down, right?
Beautiful grass. We manage it very moderate in grazing, so we leave a lot of grass back for the next year. If you're in the grass-fed beef business, it's necessary to have a lot of grass, because if you're out of grass, you're out of beef. So
there you go. Now, fast forward to the 21st century, and something that in many parts of California, including Paso Robles, where we now are, wine growing has been grape growing and making wine has been something that's been going on for a very long time, but it's relatively new for Hearst Ranch, Jim, right?
That's correct. Yeah, this is a venture that we entered into just recently, this last year, between the Hearst and the Saunders, and it seems to be very, very successful so far. We're opening our tasting room to the public next week, and we will have several select markets that will have wines available, plus on the internet as well.
Now, you've been doing this yourself a little while, though, Jim.
Just a little while, about 20 years, and I've successfully avoided getting into the retail end of this business until I met up with Steve Hearst, and we decided we had some very similar interests, and we could take this to a level that we both enjoyed, and that's kind of the key to our program. We told each other that we'd cease to operate when this became not fun anymore, so we're keeping it on that level.
Great. So the vineyard is not close to Hearst Ranch.
Well, by the crow fly, it's very close.
Assuming you were a crow, which you're not.
Yeah, but it's very close. Geographically, we're only, Cliff can tell me probably better than I can guess. I would say 10-12 miles crow fly, but Yeah, we're very very close, and actually their property touches the Paso Robles AVA region. So,
but your new tasting room that's about to open is truly just down the bottom of the hill.
It's at the bottom of the Hearst Castle Hill, right across the street from the Visitor Center in Old San Simeon Bay, which is owned by the Hearst. It's absolutely
now
beautiful site.
Yeah, we went down there after we were at the ranch yesterday and stopped at the grocery store.
Yes, great.
So it's right there.
Yes, it's inside the grocery store there.
Oh, it's inside the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Where does Jeremy fit in? We brought Jeremy all the way down here. Tall, handsome fellow that is with his first baseball cap on. What's your part of the operation, Jeremy?
Well, Jim and I met a couple years ago while I was working for another local winery, and him and I used to always chat about the vineyard. And then he brought me on about a year ago to help run the vineyard and manage it and take care of the plants. And when this idea, the Hearst Ranch Winery Project, was born, I was, enthusiasm would be an understatement. A great opportunity for me to not only follow my passion in the vineyard, but also take it into the cellar where I also have interest. So I am now splitting my time half and half in the vineyard and the cellar.
Tell us about what types of wine you make, and I thought it was interesting how you named them.
Yeah, well, actually, Jim can fill everybody in on the naming, but our first releases are 5 2007s and a 2008. And the 2008 is a Chardonnay from Monterey County, the Santa Lucia Highlands Appellation. And we're also doing a Cabernet Franc 2007 from Paso Robles. It's a blend of six or seven vineyards.
That's
in the
an
area.
Ambitious one.
Yeah. that was an interesting and fun wine to make.
But it goes well with that beef we tasted.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And in addition, we are doing a Merlot, also a 2007, a Cabernet Sauvignon, a late harvest Zinfandel, and our big blend, which is a Bordeaux-based blend with a small amount of Petit Sirah.
Yeah, which also is very nice with your beef.
Absolutely.
So, Jim, you're going to tell us what the... And did we ever say that your last name is Saunders?
Saunders, that's correct.
Yes, because it goes very well with Saunders Vineyard.
Yeah, it works well. Yeah, thank you.
Tell us about naming.
Well, that was a pretty scientific process. Steve Hearst, Cliff, and I, another gentleman you met yesterday, Jock Douglas, sat in a room, had a couple glasses of wine, and started coming up with names that were points of interest on the ranch. And so we came up with a list, and then Cliff narrowed it down for us. We came up with Glacier Ridge for our Chardonnay, which is a point of interest out there. It was an old glacier field coming off the Highlands area. Lone Tree for our Cab Franc, just a point of interest that's on the ranch. I wish I could tell you that some old bandits were hung there, but I can't do that. That wasn't the case. Pico Creek Merlot, you cross over Pico Creek. It's a live stream pretty much annually, year-round. Dumps out in the Pacific Ocean. Bunkhouse is our Cabernet Sauvignon, named after the bunkhouse that was built for the real cowboys that used to work out at the ranch.
I was amazed how many people used to stay there.
At the bunkhouse?
Yeah.
At the bunkhouse, back in its heyday, it was housed by the cowboy and farming 20 employees there.
Do you work at all together, you three?
Well,
I mean, is there a crossover between the beef production and the wines?
We like to sample each other's wares, there's no question. You know, I really enjoy what Cliff's done out there, and hopefully we don't poison him with what we make.
I'm becoming a wine drinker at this point. Wasn't really, but I'm beginning to really love the wine, and I really enjoy what these guys are doing. So I think we're a really good combination. It's a good pairing.
That it is. I've got two more to go through. The Point is our special reserve Bordeaux blend that Jeremy just mentioned. It's named after the point in San Simeon Bay, and our late harvest Zinfandel is called Enchantment because a lot of people call that on the, of the castle. So
I'm just intrigued. I see a restaurant here in the future, perhaps a steakhouse.
I don't know. You'd have to talk to Cliff about that and Mr. Hearst, but we would certainly be on the menu, I would hope, for their wine list.
I would certainly think that's true. And so cowboys don't just drink beer.
Cowboys typically aren't heavy wine drinkers. I think it's the glass. So I've converted to a whiskey glass, and it works very well.
Them stem was hard to carry on your horse. Right?
Exactly. But I'll tell you, it takes a lot of beer to make good wine, too. So,
We actually heard the other day that it takes quite a lot of wine to make good wine, too.
You got to watch that, too. Well, yes, absolutely.
Because, of course, you have to taste it all.
Yes.
You have to blend it, and then you taste it, blend it and taste it, and blend it and taste it. And what happens is the last man standing get to pick the blend.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Well, we wish you great success with the wine venture.
Mention the websites?
Oh, of course we can.
Especially since you can products.
I forgot we let you get a hold of a microphone.
It's tough, I must say. So, let's see. We do HearstRanch.com for the beef, right? Okay. And then we do HearstRanchWinery.com for the wine. And you can order that online as well?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, well, you sound like you're all having a good time.
We're going to have a really good time. We're going to get a glass of wine right after this interview, I think.
So, I see. I hope it wasn't to be that ruling.
And I got to tell you, you're sitting next to another cowboy here. That's what my degree's in. When I went to Cal Poly, like Cliff.
You have a degree in cowboy?
Well, kind of. I have animal science, so.
I see.
You betcha. That's where we all started.
So you better size him up for a horse and a hat.
I don't think they're hats don't fit me, and I'm not real friendly with horses, so I don't know how that'll work.
Well, what I want to know is why don't any of you guys wear cowboy boots? I kept wanting to ask the question. You did it today. Oh, aren't you just so wonderful?
And mine are in the truck, too, Ann. I'll tell you. My hat my wife won't let me wear. She said I look ridiculous in it.
This is a man with a very handsome black cowboy hat on, and so
which is Cliff. I mean, it's
Cliff, that's right.
And he has
Cliff,
his boots on.
And maybe you'll be in cowboy heaven by then, but I think in 2060, 200 years after the founding of the Hearst Family Ranch, your program will still be going on. Don't you think so?
Yes, sir. We're building this in a sustainable fashion to pass on to the next generation. So, yeah, we'll be around forever.
Well, thank you all for coming by, and thank you for the tasting we did with the beef and the wine. And what do you say?
I think they say Hearst Ranch beef, Hearst Ranch wine. It's what's for dinner.
Okay, thank you all. Bye-bye. Oh, what a fine time we had with that crew. And also, yet another day, the tour of this absolutely incredible castle, the Hearst Castle. But anyhow, it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Here we are again. And here's the final segment. If you're out and about, that's one thing. But where do you stay in Paso Robles?
Well, you have a couple of interesting choices, and we got to talk to representatives of both places. If you want to stay in some very elegant accommodations right in the heart of downtown Paso Robles, the Hotel Cheval is for you, and there's a horse part of the story, which has something to do with the name, perhaps. And all the rooms are named, they don't have numbers, they're named after racehorses. I think ours was called Firebird.
Yes.
And the story of each horse is inside the room.
And there are horses everywhere, absolutely everywhere.
And if you prefer to stay at a place that's really convenient to the vineyard trails, then you can stay at the Bellacera Hotel and Spa, which is just outside the center of Paso Robles, convenient to the 101, to the 46, which is the east-west road that runs through Paso Robles, and lots of wineries. And we talked to a representative from there, too. So here they are, Hotel Cheval and Hotel Bellacera.
Ava Peck, you're marketing director of one of the most charming properties that I've ever seen.
Well, Ann and Peter, thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me to speak with you this afternoon.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the Hotel Cheval, which is
French for horse. So Hotel Cheval.
Which explains why we have horses everywhere I look.
Right, exactly. Hotel Cheval is the brainchild of our owners, a husband and wife team, Robert and Sherry Gilson. And basically, they brought two of their passions together. They are avid equestrians and avid travelers. So they took some of the characteristics of their favorite hotels that they've traveled throughout the world and visited and brought that together with their passion for horses. And then Now we have Hotel Cheval in downtown Paso Robles. We're very close to the historic downtown park here. We're in walking distance to all the local restaurants and tasting rooms and shopping.
We're right in the middle of everything we want to do.
Exactly. And now Paso Robles is known for its wineries. Of course, we have 200 plus at this point. But now in downtown, we have approximately 20 good tasting rooms. So conceivably, a guest could come spend a day driving about the countryside and a day completely on foot. And we've even had guests, we have a really lovely train station, take Amtrak and never set foot in a car.
Yeah, because it's only like 2 blocks. Is it south or north?
It's exactly 2 blocks south of us.
South. So it's really convenient. The most amazing thing about this property, listeners, I mean, you just have stayed up front. It looks like it's always been here.
Right.
So it's new, but yet it's respectful. It was built with 100 years of history built in.
Yes, that was absolutely something they wanted to achieve. We opened officially on April 13th of 2007, so we're just coming up on our 3-year anniversary. We're just a small boutique luxury hotel with 16 guest rooms, all built around a central courtyard, and we have lovely wood-burning fireplaces that the guests really enjoy in the evenings.
And fire pits in the courtyard.
Exactly.
Fluffy pillows everywhere, big fluffy bed clothes.
Yeah, comfort was the predominant thing that the Gilsons had in mind when they set this hotel up.
Not to mention the perfect attention to every detail. You say that Mrs. Gilson has exquisite taste, and I'm looking at these fabulous ostrich skin covered chairs around the main table in the library. Just gorgeous. I mean, spare no expense either.
No, and no detail was overlooked. It really is apparent. And we hear that comment. And one of, I think, the highest praises that we get again and again is that not only do people have a really good time and stay here and they love the luxury hotel experience, but they often feel that it's more like staying at the home of a very wealthy friend. It's just much more a home-like welcoming environment than most hotels.
I guess they are. In a way, they are staying at the home of a rich friend.
That's true.
just happens to be Mr. and Mrs. Gilson.
Right.
And they're not always here.
I love in this library with the horse theme everywhere. Wouldn't you know that they have a selection of Dick Francis novels?
I know. I don't think it was that well thought out, but yes, I know he does feature horses in most of his
race
exactly.
Themes, yeah.
And in fact, all of our rooms are named after
racehorses.
They don't have numbers. They're named for racehorses. And every room has a little framed picture of the horse that it was named after with a little bit of a biography about that particular horse.
And the artwork is excellent, too.
Well, it's all original pieces. That there's nothing here that's anywhere else.
Now, who comes here?
I would say a majority of our guests are from California. People really, we get a lot of people from Southern California. We get, of course, a lot of people from Northern California who are now discovering this area after kind of having explored Napa and Sonoma kind of to their fullest. Men wanting to experience something a little bit different. Probably a lot of people would liken us to how Napa and Sonoma were maybe 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Especially Sonoma.
Right. But we also get quite a few visitors from the East Coast and abroad. So people are finding Hotel Cheval.
Okay. And you have a website, which is?
We do. It's www.hotelcheval.com. And that's C-H-E-V like Victor A-L.
And how do people go? They can make reservations online?
Absolutely. Okay. They can go right from our website and make reservations. We really like to speak with people. We kind of pride ourselves on the high touch that we give all of our guests, and we like to customize every aspect of their visit. So the more contact we have with the guests, the better. But absolutely, it's doable online.
Yeah, the Inn at Blackberry Farm said that, if you remember. They said they don't take reservations over the internet because they feel like they want to speak to each guest and have a chance to know what it is they really like. And I think it's a great thing that you're doing the same thing.
Now, what about this horse to go to restaurants you were telling me about? What's his name?
Yeah, well, we do have our own Belgian draft horse. His name is Chester. And
Chester.
He's been quite a fixture on the scene here in Paso Robles for the past 3 years. He was originally a Belgian draft horse. He is a Belgian draft horse, but he was originally working for a farmer in Ohio, an Amish farmer. And then he brought here by the Gilsons to Paso Robles. And for the past 3 years, he has faithfully shuttled guests to and from dinner in our vis-a-vis, which is a face-to-face horse-drawn carriage for dinner on Friday and Saturday nights. But actually this January, he segued into semi-retirement. He certainly has earned his R&R. He did an amazing job, and he will still be present for special events and special occasions, but he won't be here on a weekly basis. So he's
I thinking we were supposed to ride it together on the back. I didn't realize it.
Actually, the footman rides on the back.
The footman rides on the back. Yeah. And nobody rides on the horse.
No, this absolutely. Is, and it's a little...
this is a big horse.
He's a big horse. He's larger than a Clydesdale.
Oh, is he bigger than a Clydesdale?
Yes, 18 hands, 16 or 18, oopsie. And eats an unbelievable amount of hay and rolled oats every day. And it's a little bit like a guide dog in that people are really interested in petting and touching him. But when he's working, and he cannot be handled. But he's a beauty. He's a sweetheart. And, yeah, he really did a good job. Yeah.
Now, of the amenities here, you can get spa services in your room.
Absolutely. We offer a full spa menu. The treatments are simply done in the room. Since space was at a premium because we're in downtown Paso Robles, the decision was made. So we have therapists, and they come to the room, and they can do massages, hot stone, facials, body scrubs, body wraps. So anything that you can think of, they can do for you in your room.
If we had any gap in our schedule, I think I would sign up.
We're sort of heavily scheduled, but we're so happy that we're spending part of our stay here in Paso Robles at Hotel Cheval. And thank you so much for joining us,
Ava.
Well,
thank you for inviting me to participate in your program, and I'm glad you're enjoying your stay here at Hotel
Cheval.
We like
it. We like it a lot.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and I can figure out how I can carry these chairs back.
I have a feeling I'm going to have to put a note in your folio to come and do a count before you check out.
Well, listeners, you've heard Johnny Cash sing about a boy named Sue. Now we're going to introduce you to a young man called Baxter Boyington, who just admitted that he was named after someone who was involved in, shall we say, the illegal movement of alcoholic beverages.
Back in the 30s.
Back in the 30s. So he was probably friends with Joe Kennedy and a few other people who made a little money while that was going on. But that's not the reason we're here. We're in Paso Robles still, and we're at the Belisera Hotel. It's actually the
La Belisera Hotel and Suites.
Hotel and Suites.
Conveniently located right off Route 46. Close to the intersection of 101. It's so convenient. Wouldn't wish for a spot that's better to explore this wonderful area, and a comfortable place to stay and a great place to eat. And Bax is going to tell us all about
it. Certainly. Well, I'm glad to have you folks here and setting up studio in our lobby. It's been real fun today.
Yeah, right in front of the blazing fireplace. It's wonderful.
I always say I don't need to go to the world comes and I meet them in my lobby, and today you guys have really proven that to be true.
And we're at table six, which has its own story.
Yes, this is where you'll frequently find winemakers of a Friday evening. There's a rumor going around that if you're missing your winemaker on a Friday night, he's at table number six at Enoteca.
So is this one of those places where winemakers come and bring a bottle they're proud of?
Absolutely. I get to drink things around that you'll never find in stores at this table.
And somebody's pouring out front as well in the lobby.
Yes, we have one of our lead local wineries, Opolo Vineyards, here this afternoon, pouring in our lobby. And they do a tremendous Zinfandel that we do a tremendous business with. So we're looking forward to having them here with us.
Tell us more about the La Belisera, and can translate, of course.
Yeah, of course.
go ahead.
Beautiful evening.
Absolutely. So,
La Belisera is just a little over 2 years old.
I was going to ask how old.
We're a 60-room luxury boutique hotel on four floors. We have 60 rooms. And to make sure that we can satisfy all people's needs, we have 13 different room types.
Oh, wow. Great. And the bar and... It's called Enoteca.
Correct. The restaurant and lounge, we refer to it as, is Enoteca. About a 60-seat restaurant. Quiet and intimate is one of the things people tell us they like about us. They can come and have a conversation over their meal.
We're going to do that tonight.
We're looking forward to that with you. We also have a nice patio outside, kind of a nice protected area where a lot of Chamber of Commerce type business gets done, as well as wedding rehearsal dinners and things like that.
Okay. You have a real roster of specific events here, right?
We do. We have a large conference room, about 2,200 square feet, one of the nicest, largest ones in the county.
And so, you have some gym stuff, which I'm really missing. I haven't had access to a gym.
The fitness room awaits you 24 hours a day with some great equipment.
The fitness room is going to await you probably in about 15 minutes as we prepare ourselves for dinner.
I'll warn the free weights that you're on your way.
now what's the style of the menu in the restaurant?
We just refer to it as an upscale American cuisine. There's always been a little bit of an emphasis onto seafood.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. We have a dish that I could never remove from the menu without being killed here in town. It's a coconut-encrusted halibut over almondine rice and then soy-glazed vegetables and a pineapple curry sauce that's on it. So that's a real local favorite. We just launched our new summer menu. We change our menu frequently during the year to take advantage of all the great things that grow around here.
Oh, well, don't they, though, huh?
Yeah.
And, like, who comes here generally?
We get a real mix. We're one of those restaurants that people with special occasions in the area come to celebrate. Many folks that are just regulars here with us. And then we've really become a part of the wine industry that's here, so people that are coming from out of the area to experience Paso Robles and all the amazing things that have been going on here for the last few years, find us to be a comfortable home with the style of accommodations they've come to expect.
And have you always done this?
I've been in hospitality and tourism for quite a long time here in the county.
Yeah. You said you were a broadcaster?
I was with the film commission. I was the film commissioner for the county for a while and was involved in opening a beautiful large hotel down in Pismo called the Dolphin Bay Inn several years ago. But I've always been here in hospitality in this county.
Great. Are you a native?
I almost. You have to be careful in this town because there's so many fifth and sixth generation people.
Yeah, so you're not a native.
So I only came in 1958. I'm a fairly new person to the county.
1958.
I was very tiny.
I don't think that's really new. There are a lot of new people moving in here, too. Many people we've met have chosen Paso Robles from around the world.
Absolutely. It's been fun to watch the town grow from about 11,000 people maybe 15 years ago to over 25, 26,000 now. The growth of wineries has just been amazing. When I was growing up around here, there was Rota and a couple of others. Now there's a new winery where that I don't know the name of just opened up.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Somebody said
up.
When he came, there were 12, and that was in the 70s. Yes. Late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, there are over 200.
Oh, it's phenomenal. One of the joys for me is having the wineries come to our lobby every Friday and Saturday. We have a pouring for our guests in the restaurant and the hotel. So every Friday and Saturday, I get to meet a winemaker, spend some time with them, drink their wines, get to enjoy it. And, of course, a hard part of my job is driving down those back roads and calling on the wineries and encouraging their referrals back and forth.
Oh, that must be really hard work.
I try to look really hangdog when I come back.
Now, tell us something about, you said there are 13 different styles of room. That's an awful lot.
Isn't it amazing? Yes.
I mean, was that done with a particular purpose in mind?
I believe the idea was to be able to have levels of accommodation and value to be able to suit people in this range of accommodation, upscale. We start with a beautiful executive king room, over 400 square feet. Our weekday rate is $179, $199 on the weekend for that room. All of the rooms have a beautiful marble top mini bar with a little sink and a refrigerated mini bar.
Right, right.
There's also a small refrigerator in the room so that if my wife comes, she won't take everything out of the mini bar. The rooms are equipped with a computer, so it's all very connected, wireless throughout the property.
Right.
And then in the rooms also, the 42-inch flat-screen televisions can become a monitor, and they have their own keyboard.
Yeah.
So if you're really proud of your spreadsheet, you can put that up on the wall.
Oh, wow. So that's an unusual. So you actually provide not just a port, but a computer.
I told you that, but I guess I didn't explain it.
Absolutely.
No, I saw it.
And you're experiencing our wireless here now.
We are indeed. Our room has a triangular
jacuzzi.
Yes, you have a Deluxe King Whirlpool room.
Okay.
And our idea of a whirlpool is in the corner with some columns and some travertine steps up, and you're surrounded on two sides by beautiful murals by John Partridge, a well-known local watercolor artist.
Wow.
If you put a little candle out there, turn off the lights, you're in Provence, Tuscany, Portofino, Catalina.
And wet candles are next to the refrigerator?
They're in the room or at the front desk, and those would be soy candles.
So you don't have to bring your own candles?
No. We'll take care of you here at La Bella Sera.
You know, I think it's amazing to realize the difference in value between accommodations in this area. Mm-hmm. And, like, let's compare it to Napa.
Oh, my. Yes.
What a change.
We're still proud that we're Paso Robles, and we're just who we are, and we found that somebody's growing some really great wine around here to go with our great beef and the other great vegetables.
Now, do you keep a good wine? Well, you must keep a good wine program because it's one of your jobs to go out to make sure that happens.
Oh, absolutely. It's my job to be the friendly face of the wineries and make sure that we're doing business back and forth, making sure our guests are referred out to them. Our concierge is very conscientious.
Okay. So you help in that process too. So if people
Absolutely.
Are saying, I have this much time and this is the kind of thing I like, you can suggest where they might go?
Absolutely. We're glad to create an itinerary for them, maybe call ahead and make a reservation if
very
that's
good.
Necessary. We work very hard to make sure that if there's complimentary tasting cards available from the wineries, we have them here at the front desk for them. So if someone should say, I'm heading out to Pipestone, we go, oh, great, while you're on the way, here's some tasting coupons for several wineries that are on your way. Have a good day on the back roads.
Very, very good. And now, one
of the ways that someone told us that you can get around Paso Robles if you don't have a designated driver is there's some kind of tour bus that goes around?
Yes, we have a number of partners that have grown some very nice tour businesses here in town. We work closely with the Wine Wrangler, and Breakaway Tours are two of the leading ones. We have packages here at the hotel so you can get a room and the wine tour. We make those reservations for you. The most popular ones are a van tour that'll go to 4 to 6 wineries during the day. Includes a wonderful lunch out in a vineyard someplace, and there's so many great picnic spots out there. And they know the wineries. They know the winemakers, so they can get you some access and maybe get you in a place you couldn't get otherwise.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Let's go have a nap before dinner.
Yeah, let's first of all get a website.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. We are at labellasera.com, and that's labellasera. Seems like a song I should sing. Labellasera.
Oops, now I think it's time.
That's worse than the one about mothers don't have.
Girl, don't let your children grow up to be cowboys.
We did that one today, too.
We did another interview, which you may have heard already. So Baxter was singing, but we stopped him. I had the Chuck Barris kill button ready.
Oh, good, yeah. Throw me off of the hook. Yes, labellasera.com, and that'll also get your information for the restaurant Anateca.
Well, thank you so much, Baxter. Thank you for your hospitality here at table number 6, and we'll look forward to dining with you shortly.
My pleasure. I'm so glad to have you here enjoying Paso Robles.
Well, it's an enjoyable day, and I look forward to this evening, this beautiful evening.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess this is an appropriate moment to close the day, get tucked in, and... same time, same place.
Next week. Oh, let's just leave a cliffhanger that we do have some more Paso Robles interviews for next week. So be sure to tune in then as well. And of course, we'll be with you then as we are every Sunday. And we hope you're following us with On the Menu. And until next week, we have to say
bye bye.